Blog Talk Radio.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. I go to the movie and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. Then I go to my brother and I say, brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Lord, there have been times that I thought I could last for long, but now I think I'm able to carry on. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gon' come. Oh, yes it will.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another Friday night segment of Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. A reminder, Let's Talk Fort Worth does not own the rights for the music you just heard. Also, we're going to ask you tonight to click that share. Tell someone that Let's Talk Fort Worth is on the air. And we're supposed to be talking to five of the candidates running for mayor here in the city of Fort Worth. We're supposed to be talking to Deborah Peoples, Ann Zeta, Daniel Caldwell, Chris Rector, and Cedric Kanyenda. Some housekeeping before we begin. Early voting begins Monday, April 19th, and it runs through the 27th. Also, to vote by mail, you must apply by Tuesday, the 20th. Understand, in order to vote by mail in Texas, you must be 65 years or older, disabled, out of the county on election day and early voting, or be confined to jail. We all know election day is May 1st. So a reminder, get out and vote, y'all. Let's make this a historic election. A lot of the times during voting times, we hear about the photo ID being an issue. So let me give some clarity on what I found about that. Photo ID must be current, or for voters under 70, they have not expired more than 4 years prior to voting. So the photo ID must be current, or for voters under age 70 have not expired for more than 4 years prior to voting. age 70 and older can use any expired photo ID that otherwise remains current or correct, I guess I should say correct, no matter how long it has been expired. So as long as they have an ID and this has the correct information on it, it does not matter how long it has been expired. Your address on the ID does not need to match the address you use to register to vote. If you don't have one of these, here are some supporting forms of ID. They say a government document that shows the voter's name and address, including the voter's voter registration certificate, a current utility bill, a bank statement, a government check, a certified domestic birth certificate from the U.S., state, or territory, or a document confirming birth admissible in a court of law, which establishes the voter's identity, which may be a foreign birth document. So those are some of the things that can be used, y'all. So there's no excuses for us not to get out and vote. Okay, y'all still looking for some of my panel tonight, and that kind of perturbs me because I'm a very timely person. I'm very thorough when I invite you to be a guest. And when you confirm and you say that you will be here, I kind of expect that you're going to be here. And if not, it speaks volumes to what type of leadership we'll have in this city. I'm just going to be very honest. So it is what it is. But, okay, y'all, let's get started. I'm going to roll with whoever I have. And maybe that's our next mayor for the city of Fort Worth. It just may be what it is. I'm looking for the numbers that I saw. What you sent me in your emails stating that it would be the number that you were calling in from. So that's the numbers that I'm looking for. There's a lot of callers on the line, but I'm looking only for the numbers that were given to me via email that would be the number you're calling from. So if you are one of my panelists, if you have not already pressed one, if you would do so now, that will let me know that you are on the board and supposed to be part of the panel. So that would be Ms. Peoples and Zeta. And I believe, and let me be clear, I'm sorry, Ann Zeta said she would be with us in the second hour or close to the second hour. So Ms. Zeta is only supposed to be coming in the second hour. But Deborah Peoples, Chris Rector, and Cedric Kenyenda is supposed to be on the line now. I see currently Daniel Caldwell. Good evening, Mr. Caldwell. How are you?
Pleased to be here. I just heard your scathing reprimand of those who are not on the line, and wow.
You know what? I don't want to sound like a reprimand, and I apologize. I apologize if I sounded that way, but anybody who follows the show knows that I'm timely. I'm very thorough when I invite you, and I'm very clear with the directions on what you need to do. And so when you don't anyway, it speaks volumes. And I'll say something, Mr. Caldwell. A lot of people I noticed did not have a lot of funding for their campaigns. I think you were one of them. But I think sometimes what people don't have in the funding, they may show leadership skills in other ways. One thing I've noticed about you is you are consistent. Wherever there is a panel that wants to talk about the race, you are there. I have seen that.
I try.
And I think that
I'm acting in good faith. I'm trying to be diligent. I try not to make promises I can't keep.
Mm-hmm. I've noticed that. So in 3 minutes or less, can you tell us a little bit about who Daniel Caldwell is, what your platform is, and your vision for the city of Fort Worth?
To the first one, everyone has family roots. I was the youngest of 8 children in a broken home on welfare. And every one of my brothers and sisters is a statistical anomaly. None of us should have been able to make it out of it, community or state, based on pure numbers, but 2 of my siblings were valedictorians, and I graduated from 2 universities here in Texas in engineering and law. I was an Eagle Scout and Varsity Letter recipient in high school. Mm-hmm. I completed 4 years of ROTC. I am motivated to run primarily based on the values of citizenship and service that were ingrained into me through the leadership development program as a youth and in college, going through military programs. As far as my platform, my priorities, I want to improve the basic city services we provide, maintain civility in the water, in the emergency response from EMS, police, fire department. Since those are the primary functions of the local government, I want to maintain and improve on the city's budget, see where we can, as it were, cut the fat, where there are areas where the city does, in my opinion, spend more than it should and waste money, partly due to it's not so much ordinances but internal policies and departments that can be improved. And I, as far as wanting to improve the city, I have a focus on infrastructure with a degree in civil engineering. I'm interested in public works. I think we need to build bridges, both literally and figuratively, to connect the different neighborhoods and communities within Fort Worth that have been relatively isolated with the remnants of segregation from generations ago that we haven't been able to completely cast aside. I'd like to make it so that we encourage business coming into Fort Worth by improving mobility, getting people from point A to point B without having to go several miles out of the way, because there are parts of the city where there frankly aren't roads that will connect in a direct fashion because the roads are like 98% built, but there's a couple hundred-yard gap that we can relatively inexpensively bridge, pave, so that we can get where we need to go. And then in trying to put new infrastructure in, I would like to not demolition the old infrastructure first, because that reduces the quality of services we're providing while waiting for the new construction to be done. I would like to see Fort Worth embrace its role within the Metroplex and not try to be a standalone, just like no man is an island, nobody, no city exists in isolation either. We have all the suburbs that were quicker to annex some areas faster than Fort Worth was, that we have to work with on projects. So I'd like to see our neighborhoods connected and our position within the Metroplex reaffirmed, that we're not just Fort Worth. We are the second two out of three letters of DFW. And we have a position of prominence that we can take advantage of and have leveraged to the benefit of our own residents. I'd like more of the city employees to actually live in the city of Fort Worth. I want to be able to proudly say that most of our employees live here, but currently they don't. And that, it to me, is shameful, that they'd rather live somewhere else.
Okay. That makes sense.
That's kind of a rant, and I think I might have gone over my 3 minutes, but
I'm not sure if one of my let me be clear again. If you, the phone lines, there's a lot of calls on the phone lines. If you are a panelist for tonight's show, you need to press 1 now so that I can find you on the board. However, I need to know the number that you were calling in from is the number that you gave me. Otherwise, I won't identify you on the phone lines. Now, I see 682-385. Are you a panelist for tonight? If not, if you would press 1 to take yourself out of the queue, and then I'll know that you're not a panelist, and then you can press 1 again, and that will let me know that you were not a panelist, but you're a caller. That's 682-385. Okay, they're not doing. Let me open your phone line. 682-385. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Cedric and Inda.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
Oh, I'm good. This is one of our panelists as well, Mr. Cedric Ken. How do you pronounce your last name, Ken?
Give it a try.
Ken Yenda?
You got it on the first try. There you go.
Oh, good. Well, Mr. Kenyenda, thank you for joining us tonight. Can you tell us, the first question was if you could tell us a little bit about you, your platform, and your vision for the city of Fort Worth.
Well, my vision is not that complex. It's what everybody wants. And First and foremost, it is shameful that the city as big as Fort Worth does not have public university. You have TCU, we have Texas Wesleyan University, but we do not have a public university. As a city who's moving toward becoming the 12th biggest city in America, it has to change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And also, transparency. Currently, the current leadership is doing everything that they can to not give us the information that we need. The city has many programs in place, but it is not being communicated to everyone. It should only be only a small few who take advantages of those programs. All of us who can do the job should be able and be aware of those services. So transparency and information is key. And I do believe it is high time for change in our city. I believe any of these candidates here running, I've met several of them. We all have great passion for our city. We want the best for our city. We're not doing this for us. We are doing this to make our city better for our kids. And our kids will do the same for the next generation.
Okay.
So we have a lot of stuff that we have to work on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it doesn't, it sounds like you, and I shouldn't judge anybody, but it sounds like you're foreign. So how long have you lived in the Fort Worth area?
Actually, I lived there since I was a kid. But I mingle with a lot of ethnicity, so I'm a mixed breed of all kind of stuff. Lived in a lot of places also.
Okay. Because I hear an accent. I think that's what I was trying to say. I think I hear an accent.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I just thought I heard an accent that seemed pretty thick, so I didn't know how long you had been here.
Well, for over 20 years, actually. I'm a graduate of MacArthur High School in Irving, Texas. And after that, I went to Texas Woman University. I got a bachelor's degree in biology there. From there on, I moved to getting an MBA from TWU.
Wow.
And I own several businesses within our city. I'm a father of two kids, and I'm raising them here in Fort Worth.
Wow. You know, I spoke to Mr. Cowell earlier about, I think we said online, you spoke to me earlier online about the fact that you didn't raise a lot of money for your campaign, and I think, Mr. Cotwell, the same thing applies. But I think character speaks volumes, and I really want to say to all the candidates running in all the races, it's any man's race right now. And anybody who does not know that and is on a high horse, trust me, it is any man's race. And I would say to those that don't have a lot of funding, let your character speak. Sometimes it's not always about the money. It's not always about the people who are able to put out the most flyers. And, you know, sometimes it's just not about that. In this particular race, I'll say this to all the candidates, we're looking for real people. We're looking for people that are going to come into this city and make a change. And for anybody who doesn't know that and think that people are going blindly to the polls and voting along race lines or voting along your status in the community or voting along Democrat versus Republican lines, we're not doing that this time. I think Fort Worth is woke, and I think Fort Worth is looking for a change in the candidates. And so tonight I say to both of you all that did show up, it speaks volumes, because a lot of times it seems like this race is so much of what we already have downtown. And I think for those that don't know that, we're tired of that, and we're looking for something new. And so I commend you all for showing up. There have been others that were totally dismissive of the black platforms. And I will say that to Mr. Byrd, sir, it's any man's race at this point. To Mr. Pennant, it's any man's race at this time. We have not seen you in the black community. We have not seen you on any of the black platforms, and it speaks volumes. And so it almost seems as though they don't think they need the black race, the black vote. But anyway, I'm going to get off that rant because I'm going to get myself in so much trouble. But y'all have to say that. I'm a real person, and even though I do this and I try to be neutral, I've just seen some things in this race already that I don't like. And I'm going to use this platform to tell other people, keep your eyes open and stay woke. Anybody's too arrogant to show up for a platform, anybody who thinks that they already have won this race, think again. But anyway, on to the next question, y'all. I'm sorry. I was not supposed to go there, but I'm human. anyway. Mr. Godwell, I think you have said many times about the transportation issue here in Fort Worth, and I think you spoke a few minutes ago about the transportation issue in Fort Worth, and I think it is becoming an issue. But my question to both of you all is it likely to happen that anything's going to change as far as transportation is concerned? And so if not, how do we improve on what we already have? Mass transit may not be something that's going to happen anytime in the near future here in Fort Worth. So how do we make what we have better?
Just in the past couple of years, Fort Worth contracted with VIA to establish, or Fort Worth, by that I mean Trinity Metro, since the mass transit has a board largely appointed by the city council, but the city council is not directly over the transit system. So they added zip zones that kind of are like and compete with Uber and Lyft. And that is the city transit system making baby steps in what I consider to be the right direction with advancing technology that lets us have on-demand services. I know that Uber and Lyft are relatively new in the past decade and change and have done amazing things as far as helping hundreds of millions of people, if not billions when you consider the globe, get where they need to go. And they are private, but they serve a very, very public function. As far as local mass transit with trains, I support light rail. We should have tracks. Trains are generally more efficient and reliable than a lot of the vehicle traffic that gets stuck on the freeway in traffic jams and car wrecks. They don't generally brake as often. So I do imagine that Texrail will be extending their rail lines further south into the city over the next couple years, probably just adding one or two stations at a time until they make it all the way down to the Crowley, Cleburne, Benbrook area. But that opened not too long ago for service from downtown to Fort Worth to the north side of DFW Airport, where that is a regional connector that we didn't have very long ago and which will continue to be expanded on. So there is change, and I cringe at the word change because worse is a change too. There is improvement happening and that will continue to happen even if there are still gaps in services. There are those who have benefited greatly and those who haven't really been able to feel the effect because, well, it isn't across the board. I know the Transit Alliance wants to buy a fleet of basically mega buses, giant buses, in order to provide what they consider to be a bus rapid transit service, which I consider to be kind of the wrong direction, since we already have on-demand services that individually will get people where they need to go, and we just need to basically contract with Uber and Lyft or use the service like Via, and then there are other smaller services like Alto that can help provide that transit service in a carpooling, ride-sharing format that better benefits everyone with less waste overall. Does that make sense?
It does. It absolutely does. Mr. Kenyenda, same question.
Well, I'll say this. I do believe that the hallmark of a big city, it's a transit system. For instance, in Tokyo, New York, in Germany. And we as a city, I have a different stance on what Mr. DC, you said. I do believe that we have to invest in our transit system. We have to be able to move folks. It's nice to rely on Uber and Lyft, as it is the norm nowadays. But not everyone has the means to pay for Uber ride. It might cost you up to $50 to go to get to point A to point B. I remember as a kid growing up in Irving, Texas, and sometimes I'll take the bus. I took the train. But when I asked my wife if she ever took the train or the bus, she said no. She missed out on a lot of stuff. It, to me, it was fun, a great experience. And as I said in my introduction, Fort Worth is the 12th biggest. It's about to be the 12th biggest city in America. And we have to do more. We have to do more. We are going to grow and get bigger. And Uber and Lyft is not going to cut it. It's not going to cut it. We have kids who's going to have to rely on all those transit. Today, as I was saying earlier, we are lacking higher institution of education. We are lacking, and once we do have those, I went to school in Denton, and we rely heavily on DCCT, the transit system in Denton County. It was a way for us students at UNT and TW to get around. It was good. It's good for the city. It's good for the economy, and create less traffic on roads. And as for growth, we have to take a different approach. We shouldn't just say that it is a nice city to raise kids. It is because, frankly, although it is, But what is so good to raise kids about, once my kid finish high school, he's going to have to move away to a different city to further his education. And with that come the very short likelihood that they will come back to our city and to contribute. So going from there, we are losing already brain power. We are losing talent. Those folks should contribute to our city. So, and once elected, I know it is still anybody's game. It is a strategy game. Money in this race, although it is a factor, but it will not determine who's going to be the winner.
Mr. Kenyatta, I
four of us wake up.
I was thinking as you were speaking. Every man gets one vote, y'all. Every man gets one vote. And that one vote is the equalizer. If everybody went to the polls, it's a great equalizer, despite what anybody may have already collected in campaign donations. Every man gets one vote. And I suggest tonight you all listen to these two young men. And if you hadn't considered voting for them, maybe you should, because character will take you a long ways. Being able to do what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it. And sometimes it's the small things, not the big things, that people need to pay attention to, because the small things sometimes are an indicator of what's to come. And so it just may be the tip of the iceberg, just that little thing, that last straw that makes you say, you know what, that's what I didn't catch before, but I see in that person that lets me know maybe that's not the character of the person that I need to be voting for. Something about that, whatever it is that you caught tonight that maybe you didn't catch before. So FYI, we're going to the phone lines, 314-381. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Four Words.
Good evening, Carrie. I was wondering if I pose a question to the candidates. What is their position on sanctuary cities? I know of one in Chicago, and that's near the Midwest, and I don't think it's doing very well. What's their position on sanctuary cities? And there's another question I had. It slipped my mind. How about that? But
sanctuary
I'll run
cities.
With that one. Yes.
Well, I'm going to take that one. I do believe that God did not create anyone illegal. In the eyes of God, and even the Constitution said that all men created equals, right? But my position on sanctuary city, I do believe that we have laws in our city, in our country, and which we have to respect. And we have to take all those all of that into consideration before even we start having this conversation about sanctuary city. It's not that I'm for it or against it. I just say that we have laws that govern how we live as human beings.
Mr. Caldwell.
Well, I often find that there are laws that I do not personally agree with, like when it's late at night and you're the only car within sight at a red light. So I'm going to draw this parallel. There are priorities of laws. So the highest law might be to stop at the red light, or it might be that once you have observed the safety function, the reason for the law, then you should proceed through it. My attitude toward sanctuary cities is just the same as Martin Luther King's attitude that got him thrown into the Birmingham jail, where proper respect for the law sometimes requires that you break it. Because when a law is unjust, you have a moral duty, an imperative, to not follow that and to accept the consequence for doing so. So, do I believe we should have sanctuary cities? Well, if there is a law that should be enforced, federal or state, because it is a just law, then it should be enforced, period. Mm-hmm. If the law is unjust, then it should be disobeyed and rebelled against by people who respect the law enough to accept the consequence that might come from breaking it until they can get the law changed.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's technically a kind of vague answer. The generic answer is all our laws should be laws that we shouldn't need sanctuary from.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the federal government does not consistently follow its own laws. I have sued it for failing to do so. I know that the state government does not consistently follow its own laws. I have sued it for failing to do so.
Mm-hmm.
So when we have immigration laws that the federal government is not following, and I want to make legal immigration possible. The delays in our immigration system are extreme. People may say that people are waiting in line for years to come into this country, which that they're willing to do so is impressive because I don't have that kind of patience. The law provides that the government must process an immigration application no more than 18 months. Anyone that had actually waited 18 months and been blown off, seriously ignored, disregarded, disrespected by a government that doesn't respect its own laws, by all means, they should be here because they should have had their application approved. Do I think they should, that people who haven't waited that 18 months, because that's the deadline set by Congress. I can tell you the statute section if you'd really like to hear it, 8 U.S.C. 1571. It starts with a six-month guideline with up to 12-month extension. We have people who waited years who shouldn't have had to wait. But for those who have waited more than a year and a half, that's a huge portion of someone's life, especially when they're a relatively young person, to be waiting for a bureaucrat somewhere to sign off on their paperwork. So I can sympathize with those who want to strictly enforce a law. I sometimes don't consider that law to be fairly or equitably enforced. I can also sympathize with those who don't think the law should be enforced in terms of immigration. I don't think there should be a demand for sanctuary cities. There is. I don't think Fort Worth should be one of them.
Okay. Well,
is that clear enough? Like I threw in a vague answer, and then I tried to clear it up at the end.
I hope that answers your question, Pancake. Listen, because y'all would be very frank tonight. I'm serious. Y'all got me on the right day tonight. I've been having conversations with people about, are there people in these races just to split the vote? Because some of the people have not, you know, like you said, been on any platforms, been on any shows. All we really seen is an application downtown that they're in the race. So can either or both of you tell us what you all have done in the community prior to, getting involved with this mayoral race? Did you do anything, any type of community involvement, any type of civil service, anything before getting in the race? We'll start with you, Cedric.
Well, as for me, I'm a business owner, so been busy building my business. And I do think my business serves my community right, because I do provide service to my community, first and foremost. And I strive to also spend my dollars in my city. And for most of my services, I usually prefer to get them done within Fort Worth.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Ms. Carlo?
So, me and my wife also do be going to homeless shelter every year.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to interrupt
we
Mr. Kenyanda.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. I thought he had stopped. I'm sorry, he had finished. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
You think okay. Homeless shelters at Cedric and do what?
Me and my wife be going to homeless shelters and trying to help as much as we can. And even when I'm there, one thing I tell you, though, I do find that the way we're handling homelessness in our city is just wrong. And we should have a different approach on how we tackle homelessness in our city. I usually like to refer to the Bible because I do believe it is the constitution of a human being. It shows us and gives us example on how to work on this planet. The good book tells us, give a man a fish, you feed him for one day. Teach him how to fish, you feed him for a lifetime. And today, our homeless program only provide us with fish, we provide us with the immediate need. This is how you keep someone poor for the rest of his life. By just giving out, not showing those in need how to get the fish themselves. We should have a different approach, and I believe what I bring to the table as a Christian and who have and as a man who have known a lot of adversity, and I do think that it is time people are waking up to the wrong that we have been doing in our city and on this planet for so long, and we should change that. We should actually be human enough and be bold, stand up. I was in Austin just a couple of weeks ago. It is a sad sight to see families on the road, on the streets, under the bridges. Looks like an underbridge city for homeless. And I pray that it doesn't come to our city. I pray that we do it together. The mayor is only one man, but it is together that Rome was built. It wasn't with one person. It is together. And we have to get up to our mentality that stand together if we want things to work for all of us. Even for those who did not show up for the black vote, they have to know that the black vote is there. And everybody's vote is there. We're coming together this time to build a better city for all of our kids and for all of us.
I agree. Mr. Caldwell, what kind of things have you done in the community prior to getting into the race?
Well, the most obvious answer is employment. I worked with Crowley and Fort Worth Independent School District, as well as a couple of the charter schools, as a guest educator. In addition, I participate in activities through my church. I'm a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm also a Freemason, a brotherhood of good men trying to become better. And I lived in Houston, going to Texas Southern from 2016 to February of 2019. So as a full-time student, I was a student organization leader. I was a class officer. I was president of the Federalist Society chapter and was recognized for bringing guest speakers to campus. I volunteered and was a member of the NAACP chapter there. Locally, I have changed my membership in from the Houston chapter to the Fort Worth chapter of the NAACP, and volunteered with the Tarrant County Bar Association in holding clinics and workshops to help those who might not otherwise be able to afford an attorney to help them with their problems, like trying to do an adoption or I hate divorce, but I have helped people fill out divorce papers in order to be able to present them to a court.
Are you an attorney or paralegal by trade?
Well, paralegal is a broader term than attorney. Mm-hmm. So, yes, a paralegal. I joined the Texas Bar the Texas Bar Paralegal Division years ago, and got a certification as a paralegal before going to law school. I passed the Texas Bar, and I'm suing the state of Texas for not following its own rules.
Wow. Okay. Well, thank you for your answer. We see that Ann Zeta has joined us. Good evening, Ann. How are you? Welcome to Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Good evening. Thank you. I'm glad that you could recognize I was here. I wasn't sure how to get on so that you could hear me other than from the call-in number. So thank you for having me.
Thank you. Can you tell us in 3 minutes or less who is Ann Zeta, her platform, and her vision for the city of Fort Worth?
Sure. My name is Ann Zeta, and I have an undergraduate degree in environmental studies with an emphasis in policy and planning. I then attended the University of Texas at Arlington, where I received a master's degree in city and regional planning. And while I was still in school, I went to work as a planning consultant. I worked for many of the cities throughout the Metroplex that didn't have their own in-house planning staff and did a whole myriad of things for them, either just reviewing plans that they had presented to them or doing zoning ordinances and subdivision regulations and all the nitty-gritty things of planning for those various cities. I served in my own neighborhood and then went on to be appointed to the Zoning Commission for the City of Fort Worth, representing, being appointed by the mayor. I was appointed by Mayor Moncrief and then reappointed by Mayor Price. And I served there for 6 years, which is the term limits that they have for the Zoning Commission. And when I finished that, shortly after that, the council member for District 9 stepped down in the middle of the term, Joel Burns, and that seat became open. And so people who had suggested to me that I run for city council got much more emphatic about that suggestion. And I went ahead and ran in 2014 in a six-way race and was successful in that. And then, again, had a runoff at that time. And then there was a regular election in 2015, and I didn't have an opponent, and then ran again in 2017 with an opponent and was successful. So I've served since then. 2019, I didn't have an opponent, and now the term is up in May. Similarly to suggestions from folks that I run for council, I had people suggesting that I run for mayor, and mainly I think because of my background in planning and also because of the service that I've provided in my own neighborhood and then on to the entire district of District 9. And I've really been honored to do that and look forward to working on many things citywide that I have been successful working on in District 9, affordable housing. Most people know that I'm passionate about public transportation and also working for providing availability and access to jobs. But basically looking at our infrastructure and what the services the city provides and making sure that those are provided equitably across the entire city, and not just continuing on with the squeaky wheel gets the grease delivery system that we've tended to fall into in the past, which has led to some very inequitable distributions of the things that the city provides. Things that I'm also working on, civilian oversight of the police department and independent redistricting are two topics that have come up quite a bit. And independent redistricting, I have been championing since 2016 when we had a charter election and voted to include two additional districts after the census. And working alongside folks to make sure that we're addressing issues of citizen oversight in the police department, restoring some relationships with communities and community policing. I'm not tracking myself on the time here, so if I run out, cut me off. I don't want to pick up.
Well, we got a couple of questions to catch up with you on, Sarah, because you are coming in late. So I will ask another question. You are someone who's downtown right now. A lot of people are very dissatisfied with downtown right now.
Downtown as in I'm serving on the council right now. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, I'm sorry. That you're part of the city council. That said, what can we expect differently if you were promoted to mayor? Because they felt, a lot of people felt that there was, the people were not included in the decision making. They pretty much felt like downtown didn't hear them. So what can we expect differently if you are elected mayor?
Well, I think that there have been clear distinctions between myself and some of the decisions that have been made that people have been unhappy about. So people can always expect that I will listen to everyone and I will make my decisions based on input that I receive from everyone. That's the way I've handled myself in the 7 years that I've served on the city council, and it's definitely the way that I will continue to handle myself. And in addition, in my service to District 9, I've never required people to come to city council to share their vision and their views and their input with me. I've spent my time out in the community making sure that I'm being with people in the places that they live and work and play and attend church and all of the various things that they do in neighborhood associations and such to get that feedback from them so that I'm not requiring them to come and add another their chores and their busy schedules of living their lives. So I think that that is definitely the way I've represented for the past 7 years and would continue to do so as mayor.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Next question, y'all. There seems to be a great divide between the citizens of Fort Worth and the police department, and especially after Chief Fitzgerald was fired and Lynn Krause was interim police chief for a while, and there was a lot of police shootings, and there just was a total breakdown, it almost appeared, between the people and the police department. That said, what will you all do if elected mayor to bridge that gap between the community and the police? Mr. Kenyenda, you're up first.
Yes, thank you. And, I like the fact that our current chief, Chief Notes, actually live within our city limits, and he rose to the ranks today to become our police chief. And that's what we want. We want our officers to live in our city. How can you have someone who lives in a different city have a genuine, an interest or in our city? He's there for his job. He's there for a paycheck. But if those officers that we employ leave where the patrol, they have an interest in that. They don't want their kids to grow up in a city that is run down, that is not safe. They want to make it safer. And having a community-based vision on how the police is, I don't think is the solution. And as Anne Zeta just said, I know because I've read it and seen that she's for having a civilian board to answer to complaints that is coming forward. And I don't think that is also another thing that might also bridge the gap, because you don't expect doctors to investigate themselves. When you have a complaint against a doctor, you call the hospital and get investigated. And so forth, in every profession, they don't investigate themselves. And what do we expect officers to investigate themselves? So those are issues we have to tackle. I do believe that will make police officers more humane, because those are people that you live with, you go to church with, you see at the store. That might bridge the gap.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Mr. Caldwell.
So I have repeatedly encouraged greater participation in the Fort Worth Police Department ride-in program. Just like less than 10% of Fort Worth registered voters historically turn out to vote in mayoral elections, less than 10% of Fort Worth residents have participated in the Fort Worth PD ride-in program. Basically, spend a day with a cop. Voluntarily, of course, because I know that nobody wants to spend a day with a cop involuntarily. As far as that experience goes, that gives residents the opportunity to have a city employee hear and respond to every concern that they can come up with in a full business day while that officer is doing his patrols, who's taking calls. They get to see the cop's perspective in interacting with the community, and that helps improve policing as well as attitudes toward the police. Similarly, I know that if it weren't for the police and fire departments, the majority of city employees would live in the city limits. But historically, somewhere between two-thirds and four-fifths of cops and firefighters don't actually live in the city that they work for. And so I would want – so in order to bring them into the community that they police, I would want to incentivize actually moving into the city limits where they will not only be members of the community that they police in order to improve the attitudes toward them, but also they will then be able to take a chunk of their salary and contribute to the tax base that pays their salary, which, by the way, is more than double the average salary of the residents of Fort Worth. And I know that part of the resentment toward police comes from taxes, because mm-hmm. the taxes do pay their salary. And so when someone is being taxed in order to pay the salary of someone who's making double what they are, mm-hmm. I can totally relate to that resentment, especially when the person who taxes, whose salary they're paying is not also paying that same tax. So okay. I would want to condition a number of their benefits on actually living in the city where they will be part of the community. If they are persuaded by the incentive, which would basically consist of conditioning the city's subsidy to their employee benefits, their retirement fund, their medical, on move in. They can secure a separate IRA if they don't want to live in the city. They can secure separate insurance if they don't actually live in the city. But they make enough money. And, in fact, I don't think the cops should be paid more than the firefighters fresh out of the academy. A first-year cop makes more than the average city employee. So all the other departments of the city average less than $62,000 a year, which is plenty for someone who doesn't even need a college degree to get the job.
Absolutely.
Because you don't have to have a college degree to become a cop. You've got to have like 45 hours, which is not even an associate.
Right. We're going to keep our answers to 3 minutes or less, Mr. Caldwell.
Yeah, this is just one of my soapbox issues. So I'll pass the time. I understand I'm going over.
I understand. And same question.
So I spoke a little bit about being supportive of community oversight, civilian oversight of the police department. But in addition, we need to work a lot harder on our community policing, making sure that our neighborhood patrol officers are people that are part of the communities that they serve. We have neighborhood patrol officers in some neighborhoods that have done a great job of being a part of those communities, but they're spread very thin because they cover an area that's larger than they can get to know the way that they need to. So, and then also making sure that we have more diversity in our recruitment so that the folks that are serving those neighborhoods have some understanding of the neighborhoods that they're serving and that they're there to serve and protect. So I spoke a little bit about the civilian oversight and adding to the police monitor that we've already hired. She's working hard with the stakeholders and folks to make sure that what civilian oversight looks like is reflective of what stakeholders support in our community. And so those efforts need to go forward. Basically, looking at what the Race and Culture Task Force recommended and moving forward with all of the recommendations from the Race and Culture Task Force, I think is the way that we rebuild those relationships in that community policing model so that we have police that work within our communities in a more collaborative way. But the other thing that we need to focus on is we have quite a bit of funding for our police department through the CCPD, which includes the crime prevention. And so partnering with other organizations that are experts in the things that we have tasked police to do that are not necessarily things that police should be doing. And those are things like dealing with mental health issues, dealing with homelessness. If we continue to overtax and ask our police officers to do things that are above and beyond the parameters of their job, then we end up with situations that are untenable and not in the best interest of anyone involved. And I equate it sometimes to what we've asked teachers to do. During the pandemic, it's become very clear that there's a lot of social services being provided at school and by teachers. And similarly, we call the police for everything, and there's no need to be calling somebody to show up with a badge and a gun for some of these issues. So continuing to use some of the funding from CCPD to partner with those organizations that are better suited and fit for dealing with that. We've done some of that with the HOPE team, which does a lot of outreach and with the homeless population, and also the crisis intervention team, which does the same thing. And then recently we have civilian recruits that are not police officers that are responding to some of those non-emergency calls so that we can have better relationships going forward with our police.
All right. Listen, panel, y'all got some callers on the line, so we're going to pick up a few calls. We're going to pick up area code 817-721. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Good evening. This is Eddie Griffin. I have a question for Ms. Zeta, because she's the only one that's on the panel right now that is an office holder, and she's been involved in many things. But I'm a bit confused about her role in the Regional Transportation Council, because I believe she supports taking money from Fort Worth's general fund to fund regional transportation. I don't know if that's Regional Transportation Council or if it's the North Central Texas Council of Government. Who these general funds would be going to for transportation. If she can clear that up for me, then I'll have my the answer that I need to ask the next question.
Okay.
So am I unmuted?
No, I didn't mute you.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, I'm sorry. Yes, I serve on the Regional Transportation Council, as 40 elected officials from across the region do. I'm one of the representatives from Fort Worth. I don't know where you got the idea that I support using general funds from Fort Worth to go towards regional things. What I support is us cooperating with the region so that we are not duplicating efforts and that we utilize regional funds from the region and from the federal government that come through the Regional Transportation Council on things that that support transit in the region, but funding for the city of, from the City of Fort Worth's general fund should only go towards transportation initiatives that are within the City of Fort Worth. So I do serve on that committee, which is an awesome responsibility and a great seat to have because it helps in the decisions about funding that come from the federal government and make sure that we get our fair share of that funding in Fort Worth. And I would I am currently the secretary of that body and will be the vice chair and then the chair in the next 2 years after being elected to mayor.
Oh, okay. Well,
does that straighten that out?
Well, let's set up the question about the North Central Texas Council of Government and its relationship to RTC.
They are the staff that support the RTC. The North Texas Regional, the COG, are the staff that support the RTC.
Okay. What part of our funding goes to that organization? Out of the general fund?
We may have a membership responsibility in order to be a part of the COG, but we don't send any of our funding to the COG. They have their own funding.
Well, the problem is that a lot of our money goes to the regional organization that you say represented by 16 counties.
13 counties.
A large amount of our funds.
It's federal dollars that come from the federal government. It's not general fund dollars going to the RTC. The federal funding comes through RTC and then is allocated to the 13-county region. And my serving on that board ensures that funding comes to Fort Worth.
Okay. So none of our funds go into that organization. Into a regional organization.
The dollars come from the federal government into the region, and then the members who serve on the RTC determine how that funding is dispersed throughout the region.
Okay. The reason why I ask is because it was told to me that that of all the 16 counties, that we were carrying the largest burden of the financial responsibility, but we were getting the less return in terms of service.
Well, I'm not sure whoever told you that is referring to, but I'd be happy to look into it further if you want to put me in touch with the person who raised the concern, but I do not believe that that is the way that the funding works. The RTC takes federal funding and determines how it is spent in the region. And I do not think that there's a flow of money the other way.
Well, thank
you. Okay, so we're not sending Fort Worth money to help the mid-region cities develop a mass transit bus system, while we are neglecting our own commuter rail transportation here in our area.
We're not spending any money on buses for anybody besides Fort Worth.
No.
Thank you, Eddie. We got to move on. We're going to pick up the next caller, 972-987. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Yes, good evening to you, Ms. Carey, Sister Carey, and to all the candidates on tonight. Thank you all for, your presence on tonight. Thank you. I have questions for Ms. Zeta. First of all, Ms. Zeta, let me just say this. Thank you for your service, the time you put in as a council representative, and then also I just it's commendable that you want to take it to the next level. So thank you for that. And what I'm about to ask you is nothing personal. It's nothing personable, but nothing personal. So just hear me out. First of all, thank you for your stance on the independent redistricting process. Thank you, because I believe you're the only candidate that went the other direction, and all the others, they normally do, just voted one way. So thank you for being willing to stand on what it is you believe and, you know, just going the direction you went. My one question is regarding the CCPD funding. It was something put out over social media regarding how the police association endorsed several candidates. Correct. Let it be known that we don't have a problem with the police. We just desire more accountability from the police. And these amounts were very, very, you know, questionable, you know, the amounts that they donated to the various candidates. Is it possible that this funding that was used to endorse candidates, is this some of the funding that we voted, that was voted in just here recently to get them more money, you know, over the next 10 years?
No.
Some of this money that... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
The CCPD funding is the funding that supports the police department. It's completely and totally separate from what the Police Officers Association raises to do their support of candidates, and that's the POA. There's no crossover and no commingling of funds between the POA and CCPD.
Okay. Thank you for clearing it up for me. Thank you.
No problem.
My last question would be regarding the campaign funds that are given to candidates. What happens, after they are no longer, running? You know, if they're not elected, this, that, or the other. What happens to those funds?
Candidates are required to continue to report as long as they have funds in their accounts. But they're able to donate that money to other campaigns. They're able to transfer it over to another campaign if they run for another office. I don't know all the rules. I would read up on all the rules before I would ever do anything with those funds. But I have only ever used campaign funds for my own campaigns. I've never donated to anybody else's campaign. I don't make charitable contributions out of it because I'm not going to make assumptions about what people would like me to contribute to charitably. All of my charitable contributions and all of my political contributions come out of my own personal funds. None of it comes from my campaign contributions.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ms. Zeta. Thank you for answering my question.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
That some of that CCPD money does go toward things like salaries that then get channeled as personal donations toward those who supported
people. Don't tell
me or that use of that money toward salaries. I'm sorry,
okay,
Ann. What was that?
We're going to go to 817-877. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Hey, good evening, Karen. You have a wonderful show tonight. I'm really enjoying the program and listening to these wonderful candidates. I do got a question for Ann Zeta. Ann Zeta, I would like to know, if you are elected as the mayor of Fort Worth, will you be keeping the same city manager?
I don't have any plans to change the city manager. I think that as we move forward, there's definite decisions to be made about the future of our city, and working together with the city manager and a city manager form of government is important to do as elected officials, and that is one of the positions that the council and the mayor are in charge of hiring. So I think that David Cook has done a good job with his being fiscally responsible, and that has put us in a spot where we have not suffered as greatly through the COVID as many other cities have. Long as we're aligned in our vision for the future of Fort Worth, I will continue to work with the staff that is in place at the City of Fort Worth currently.
And I got one more question for you, then this is going to be it. If you become the mayor of Fort Worth, how does Fort Worth look for you? What's your vision for Fort Worth if you become the mayor? Is it going to be totally different from how Betsy Fletcher has been running?
Well, I think there are some differences between me and the current mayor, yes. I definitely am focused on making sure that some of the things that I've been able to be successfully with in District 9 are available across the entire city. Looking at the infrastructure that exists in our city, we've definitely been a squeaky wheel gets the grease kind of delivery system in their neighborhoods and areas that have been neglected. So equity in access to services and equal opportunity to all of our citizens, and especially with racial equity, are all things that I would like to improve upon. The initiatives that Mayor Price has put in place regarding health and fitness and those kind of things, I think, are excellent, and I would definitely want to continue with those things and continue to support those things. But I would be emphasizing more on affordable housing, public transportation, and availability and access to jobs and equal access to services throughout the community.
Okay. Caller, I hope that answers your question. Next question, y'all. The term defunding the police seems to me to be defined differently depending upon who you ask. So I want to ask each of you, what does the term defund the police mean to you? And once you define it, are you for it or against it? We'll start with you, Mr. Kenyanda.
Thanks for the question. Actually, I'm totally against defunding the police. I do think it is counterproductive. What I do say is the police are trained to investigate. So for calls like social calls.
Can you define the term first?
Defunding. The word defunding means to take away. To take away funds that come to the police department.
Okay.
That's the layman term definition of defunding the police. And I'm against taking money away from the police department. It is kind of counterproductive for all of us. What I will say is I'm all for having the different units or departments still within the police that will take on social calls. We shouldn't have someone with a gun going to a welfare check. It doesn't make sense. He's not trained in sociology or psychology. We shouldn't have a police officer coming to a simple call, a family matter. It doesn't make sense. They have a gun. What do you expect? They might just deploy it. That's why we have casualty. We have issue. So I'm all for better training and possibly rethinking how we see the police. They should. They are trained to handle investigation and crime. They shouldn't be bothered with social calls and going to social services calls. None of that. That's how we make the balance. It should work. The police are there for the safety of the citizen and our city, to protect our city. And it is a solution that together we can come up if we all stand together to make that a reality. I do believe that Fall will be a safe city. And again, safe city always attract more businesses. Business think like just tourists. Why would I go there if it is not safe? And guess what? If it is a safe city where everybody feels safe, business will come by themselves. That's a strong point that I'm all for. It came to me, I travel extensively across the world. And when you find yourself in city in Europe, in some other cities in Africa and Asia, where officers are part of the community, you feel safe. In most countries in Europe or Asia, you feel safer working at night. You're not afraid that the police might harm you. Mm-hmm. It should be the same here. We shouldn't be going to work and you are afraid whenever you see a police. No. Mm-hmm. They are part and member of our community. And I guess I'm going to stop there and give my fellow candidates the time to also respond.
Okay. Mr. Caldwell, define defunding the police, and are you for or against it?
Whether I'm for or against it depends on which definition. So if the definition of defunding the police is decreasing the number of officers, I'm totally against it. I think we should be increasing the number of officers we hire rather than decreasing. Frankly, the only way to introduce what Ms. Zeta was talking about earlier, diversity in the police force, is to hire not just a couple dozen officers a year, but hundreds of them. And the city rejects 90%+ of applicants who pass the exam and are qualified to become officers, but they just simply don't have the funding to hire them all. So mm-hmm. I oppose defunding the police in terms of reducing the numbers. If we're talking about reducing the salaries of police, well, I think we should stop giving them automatic raises every year, more than like 1%, because like the $15 an hour guys get maybe a 1% to 2% a year, a quarter. The police officers get at least a 3% a year raise, which is more than double what most of the rest of the population gets automatically, whether or not they get any promotions or merit pay. So I oppose giving them more money in terms of automatic raise. To that, I would say I support defunding the police in that respect. But I want there to be more officers, and there are thousands of applicants who would become officers if the application process would let them at much lower salaries than what the city offers. I want to hire more officers, but at a lower salary. And because I suggest a lower salary, particularly a lower starting salary, in that respect, I would say, for the same amount of money, we can get more officers. Let's get more officers. There are those who say that defunding the police means to stop buying heavy assault weapons, like tanks and bazookas and TNT. And I would say, yes, definitely stop buying heavy assault weapons that cost a heck of a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Because
okay.
What they're supposed to be there for is safety. I understand mm-hmm. having an armed officer arriving for a welfare call.
Mm-hmm.
I've had people make a welfare call for me because I was walking on the side of the freeway service road in order to get home one day when I didn't have a car.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that the cop had a gun was not an issue. Most of our officers actually do have training in psychology and sociology, either prior to or since becoming a cop, and have more field experience in conflict resolution than many of the mental health professionals and psychiatrists who have a license next to their name but primarily focus on giving them meds rather than de-escalating.
Okay.
So I think I'm over my time, so I apologize for that.
That's okay. And Zeta, same question. Please define
well, I won't
defunding.
I won't go over my time. I'll just say that the problem with the slogan of defund the police is that it's basically just a bad slogan that doesn't adequately convey the intent of the person saying it, which is why we have to follow it up with questions like, what does it mean to you? The police serve an important role in our city, and it's not that we, you know, their job is to prevent and solve crimes, and it's not that we are saying that there aren't issues with training and other, you know, scope of their job that we've already talked a little bit about, but overall just defunding the police is not a good idea. So I think that clears up, answers that question.
Okay. And to be clear, my definition of defunding the police is, do we need militarized weapons to police our city? So to me, the term defunding the police means taking away tanks, taking away, you know, military-style weapons to deal with regular citizens here on the street, because we're not in Beirut, we're in Fort Worth, Texas. So,
well, don't take away the ones they already have, just stop buying more.
so you don't mind them keeping the tanks that they have? And the,
I'm not,
they've already
of
been bought.
Tanks, but...
I'm sorry. You said what, Ann?
I'm not aware of any tanks that we, that the police department owns, but if that is something that they have, I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, I think that's the I think that's the original origin of the term defund the police was about military style weapons for police departments and the fact that they didn't need them because people would be on the streets protesting, exercising their rights to protest, and then they would be met with rubber bullets and grenades and, you know, assault weapons and that type of thing. And so I think that's where the term originated. And so I was just trying to understand if you all, you know, when people say defund the police, what that meant to you all when you heard it.
Well, I definitely don't think that our police department should stop people from peacefully protesting and expressing their rights in that way. That's not anything that I would support. So I think that, yeah.
Okay. I agree. Yeah. Let's talk about gentrification. Areas like Como, a lot of people are feeling Stop 6, Como, Riverside, are just, you know, ready to be picked off, you know, and therefore you're going to be displacing a lot of people who are considered low income due to overtaxation and, you know, for whatever other reasons, gentrification may come in and gobble up the area. But that's it. What are you all going to do if elected to stabilize that in the community so that there will be affordable housing for people in Fort Worth? And I'll start with you.
So I think that we don't want people to be fearful of having improvements come to their neighborhood for fear of them not being able to maintain housing and stay in their neighborhood. So this definitely needs to be a conversation that occurs with the neighborhood about what improvements will be beneficial to the people who are there now and not be something dictated by people who might want to come in and develop and improve and bring things into a community. So it needs to be a conversation where everyone's involved. And that's definitely something that has occurred in various areas that I've represented over the last 7 years. So like I said, you don't want people to be not turning away the improvements that the city can bring to infrastructure and services and, you know, making your streets not be full of potholes and all of those kind of things. So that, but when you do bring improvements, people's value, the property values do increase. And so that can make a hardship for affordability of housing. So we need to make sure that we're supporting affordable mixed income housing of a variety of types in any place that's having those improvements so that people can continue to live in those areas. We've had several affordable housing developments go into the South Side that are for people that are seniors and for, you know, various income levels. We've also been very successful at providing permanent supportive housing throughout District 9. And this is an important thing to work on continuing to provide in any area that is seeing improvements moving forward. So that's a continued conversation that I would have and making sure that the folks that are in that area have a say and are part of the decisions about the improvements that come to their community.
Okay. Cedric and Yenda.
Well, as I usually say, sometimes I feel like I'm losing my own home because taxes are so high. And it shouldn't be like that. As a society, as a city, we should come together and address a common problem that we are all facing. And it is complex because our city is funded with property taxes. Most of our services are funded with property taxes, even our schools. And I do believe that it is high time that we have this conversation on how we keep people in their home and not be taxed out of their own houses. And that is something that we together, we experts in the matter, will come together and address the situation. As for now, I can't give you a clear-cut answer because I do not have the expertise into finding a solution to a problem that I also am facing. But we have to come with the solution together in order to address this. Thank you.
Mr. Caldwell?
So there are a couple different approaches to this question. One is on the tax side and one is on the supply and demand side, because you can increase, you can decrease the cost of affordable housing by increasing the supply. A high school economics course will teach you the law of supply and demand. We have an artificially suppressed supply. So there are areas of the city where you're not allowed to live because it's been zoned commercial or industrial or whatever else. And if you could rent a space and were willing and happy to live in a warehouse that you flip yourself, that you put in the piping and the shower and the bathtub, then by all means, I want people to have the opportunity to do that. So I would like to take a zoning approach to increasing the available supply of housing by letting people live where they want to buy or rent. Similarly, the city has passed an ordinance that is largely ignored, but there's an ordinance prohibiting Airbnb. We have more than 800 Airbnb units in the city, even though we've got a law that said Airbnb is not allowed to operate within the city as a short-term rental program. So I would go ahead and peel that back since it's not being enforced anyway. And when there's no longer a chilling effect of the law, there are people who are going to do whether the law says they can or not. But for those who strictly abide by the law, that will increase the number of housing units you might have from people just being able to rent out their spare room. And increasing supply decreases cost. From the tax side of the issue, in terms of removing the fear that your taxes would go up, well, your taxes, the value of your home for the purpose of tax, we need an ordinance that says we will only use the value at the time that property was last improved itself or when that property last changed ownership itself.
Mm-hmm.
So your neighbors on either side build a second story on their house or put in their flower gardens and your neighborhood suddenly looks nicer, that would be one of the things that might raise your taxes under the current system, but I'd like to have an ordinance that says that regardless of what your neighbors do, your tax remains the same until you either make improvements on your property or until your property changes hands. Because when you sell your property, the new property owner knows that there's going to be an appraisal and the city's going to appraise it based on the neighborhood.
Wow.
But
thank you.
That kind of free would help keep taxes down.
I agree. We're going back to the phone line. 111-1111 means it's calling from a block number, but we're going to take you anyway. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk About Work.
Hi. I have a question about cemetery policy, because recently I've had issues with my family in regards to cemeteries.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay, are you posing a question to the mayoral candidates for cemeteries?
Yeah, this is a question to the mayoral candidates.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Go right
ahead. I've had an issue with my family recently with graves and especially markers being disturbed and being messed with, and I don't think the city has a distinct policy for that yet. Recently, we had an issue with, I think, some homeless individuals. I don't know if you guys know about this, but they went to one of the graveyards, and they did something called munging. And they dug up a fresh corpse, and they had a gangbang with it. And one of them put their mouths over the vagina, and then they jumped in the stomach, and it shot the coming maggots all over.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
Oh,
what that called? I'm sorry? What did you say?
I didn't think that was a serious question.
Yeah, I don't think that caller. Yeah, we're caller. Good evening. But yeah, we're not here for that. Okay. When you do these things, I guess you get a couple of trolls when you're talking to the mayoral candidate. I don't know what that was about. Goodness, I don't even know where to go with that. Okay, y'all, listen. Due to COVID-19. A lot of small businesses took a lot of hits. Some of them didn't even make it, and a lot of the others are struggling. That said, what, if elected, will you do to help small businesses here in Fort Worth that are struggling post-COVID-19? Mr. Caldwell, we'll start with you.
Well, I opposed the social distancing mandates and mask mandates from the beginning. I think the shutdowns that are in some circles regarded as mass hysteria being worse than the virus itself, the virus is properly a special case of viral pneumonia, which we've had treatments for decades. Do I understand that it is a legitimate disease that has contributed to the deaths of millions of people? Yes. But I also understand that the fatality rate in this country has not had a statistical uptick. So I say that the government shut down those businesses. The pandemic, the virus did not. The austerity measures, which were severe and borderline tyrannical, are really what cost people their jobs and businesses and leases. And my approach would be to try to restore some semblance of normality in terms of what we want is a stable environment without undue influence from the government picking winners and losers, which is functionally what it did. Those corporations which had a treasure trove, a corporate account in the millions or billions, were able to weather it out, while the small businesses were the ones that primarily took a hit.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. I guess. And same question.
So I think your question was, what would I do as mayor to help small businesses recover from the impacts of following medical recommendations and CDC guidelines for distancing and mask wearing and shutdowns. And I definitely would continue to do the support that we have done with the COVID CARES Act dollars that we've received from the federal government to support businesses. We have done that in numbers greater than any other city in the entire country, is my understanding. And we continue to get money from the federal government for recovery for those businesses, and that's something that we would continue to do. Thankfully, in some of our communities, we've actually had people have the ability to open new businesses during the pandemic because of the overwhelming support that we've provided through making sure that companies and businesses have the PPE that they need in order, when they were allowed to open back up again, could do so in a safe manner. So those are things that we would continue to do to make sure that, that there's not a second surge. As we start to open things back up again, I think businesses have gone above and beyond to continue to try to keep their own employees safe and their customers safe by continuing to follow those guidelines as we get more people vaccinated. So those are all efforts that I would continue to do. In the near south side, which is an area that I represent in District 9, during the pandemic, we did funding, fundraising and grants for people who were from those particular industries that were the most impacted, people in the gig industry, people in the service industry, to help them make it through that. And that was something that was done because that community has been built up over time. They work together during times when there's, you know, things are going along fine. And so during a time when it was challenging, they were able to come together and support a lot of those businesses. And yes, we did lose businesses, which is incredibly unfortunate, but I think that people will be able to rebound and come back because of the communities that we've built here, and we'll continue to provide that support for small businesses in Fort Worth. I think you get more out of supporting businesses that already exist in Fort Worth than you do going and trying to convince companies and businesses to come to Fort Worth, because the people who are already here are already convinced that this is a community that they know and love and want to support, and they will hire local people to do the jobs and they will grow here. And so I think that as a mayor, I would want to continue to support local businesses that are already here in our community. So that would definitely be a big priority for me as mayor.
Okay. Cedric.
I'd like to second the last part of what she said. Last, I agree with that. Just
okay.
The last part, that last sentence.
Okay. Cedric.
Thank you. And as a business owner, I can tell you that I felt the pain, I felt the burn, and I'm still feeling it. And the mask mandates and those lockdowns was very detrimental to small business owner.
Mm-hmm.
And today I did applaud Governor Abbott for lifting the mandate. Now it is time to bring people out, to bring people to the streets, to go back to regular life. Although it's not going to be the same as before, we'll all be wearing masks, but the economy has to keep on going. People have to be able to make a living, provide for their family. And how we do that is by bringing people out and going to the parks. We recently had a forum in downtown, and coming back, I noticed that many businesses, especially restaurants, were closed. So how do we bring people back to downtown? How do we bring people back to daily activities?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a solution that we do find together. You know, as a father with two grown boys, kids grow fast. You usually need new clothes, new shoes all the time. They need to eat. And many of those businesses who provide those services are no longer there.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a need now, and we have to address it. So this situation is affecting all of us. And as a new mayor, we have to create an environment that is conducive for business, and that brings more people out. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, y'all, we're down to the last 15 minutes on our show. We're going to ask our panel to talk to the audience and tell them why they should vote for them. Early voting starts Monday. So why should the people get out and vote for you? Mr. Caldwell, we're going to ask you to do that in 3 minutes or less. Why should the people come out to the polls and vote for you?
Well, the reasons that I've been given by people who say that they support me include, one, that they agree with the answers that I give to their questions because I am responsive, like you said at the beginning of this, consistent in showing up and answering the questions that are presented to me because, one, I have a good head on my shoulders to be able to form an answer or find an answer in a timely fashion, and two, my heart's in the right place. I care about people. I really just want to serve. This election isn't about me. I want people to vote for me because they want someone who is genuinely just trying to fulfill a moral and a citizen's duty to work to improve the community that he's in. In terms of the political aspect, since we say this is a nonpartisan election, but there are still those who focus on politics, in 2018 and 2020, I was a delegate to both the Republican and Democrat state conventions. I have friends on both sides of the aisle. I'm not a Puritan as far as far right wing or far left wing. I have friends who are libertarians and independents. I'm a mix, just like the community, and I'm not trying to shove an agenda down anyone's metaphorical throat, but I want to take the suggestions and ideas and concerns that other people have and implement them because usually we come up with better solutions and ideas together. I'm not an expert in everything, and I know that. So that's why I ask, do you have anything you think I should have said that I didn't, and does that all make sense to you?
It does. It absolutely does. Cedric, same question or final statement. Why should people get out and vote for you?
You know what? It is not all about me. Voting for me, you're not only coming to work for me, but it is about all of us. You'll not find me in the office already now. I'm every day on the streets. I'm talking to business owners. I'm talking to our residents, trying to find out how the city can better the life of its residents. How can we make this city safer? I'm meeting with police officers, firefighters, teachers, homeless, and every other citizen that we have within our city limits. I want the city to work for everyone. We should have the same opportunity in the north. It should be the same in the south, in the east and west of our beautiful city. We are doing this for our kids. We want a prosperous city. And I know for a fact that I alone cannot do it. I know for a fact that together, each and every one of us will be able to pull the strings and come with a better solution, a better vision for our city. My vision for Fort Worth is a vision of prosperity. My vision for Fort Worth is a vision of a city that works for each one of us. And I don't want to take too much time because I have a great vision for our beautiful city, but I'm going to yell to Anne, who I believe also has a great vision to make our city a better place.
Wow. And why should they vote for you?
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you for inviting me on tonight. As a certified city and regional planner, I've literally spent my entire educational and professional career learning how to make a city run as efficiently as possible. I have served in my own neighborhood. I have served on the Zoning Commission as an appointee to a board or commission, and I have been a policymaker as the council representative for District 9 for the past 7 years. And I believe that my family has lived here for 30 years. My husband and I have lived here our entire married life, and we raised our family here. While I'm not a born and bred Fort Worthian, I did give birth to 2 Fort Worthians, and this is a city that I have come to love. I love Fort Worth, and as a city planner, I have a vision for the city that is livable and available to everyone. I'm passionate about the city, all the little things that make a city run and the big vision things, and my desire to make the city a place that is great for people to live and work and play alongside the experience that I have, I believe makes me the most qualified candidate. And I look forward to serving as the next mayor of this city. I know that I will lead with integrity and ethics and a deep commitment to inclusivity for everyone. But as great as Fort Worth is, we do have some challenges with infrastructure and roads and keeping our taxes reasonable. But I'm a trained problem solver, and I've been doing this for a really long time, like I said, locally in my own neighborhoods, as an appointee and as a policymaker. So I look forward to raising up to the challenge of becoming the next mayor of this city and hope that I can count on you all for your support in that endeavor. And I look forward to it.
Wow. Y'all, originally when some of the panelists did not show up tonight, I was disappointed, first of all, but I've learned in life that things work out just like they're supposed to. I thank each of the guests for coming tonight. The next mayor of our city may be on this phone line tonight. I ask you to consider everything they said. I think what we're all looking for in a mayor is honesty, consistency, someone who has the heart for the city, has the heart for the people, and is able to close the gap between the has and the have-nots here in this city, because many feel not included in the process. And I hope that you all will look at being a mayor that can do just that. And I think if one or all of you all come to the poll, or I shouldn't say come to the poll, if we come to the polls knowing that one or all of you all can do that for us, I think definitely you're going to have the votes of the people. That's all we're asking for. And it doesn't feel like that's what's happening downtown right now. And I think that's what people are upset about. And I think that's going to be what's causing a shift, if we're lucky, in this election, where people will go to the polls in record numbers. And I've quoted you a couple of times. I heard you on another forum where you said you took your son to college out of state. And when you walked into his dorm room, the first thing you saw was a voter registration card on the pillow in his dorm room. And you said that Fort Worth, for whatever reason, does not encourage voting, which is a sad commentary. But hopefully in this election, people do decide, for whatever reason, maybe just the fact that they're not happy about what we have downtown now, will get out and do something different. But I thank you all for coming on it, at least telling us your visions for Fort Worth, and speaking from the heart. Is there any final comments that you all have before we leave tonight?
No. So thank you for the opportunity, and if anyone wants to find out more about my campaign, they can reach us at www.anzeta.com, and I look forward to earning everyone's support.
Wow. Cedric, can you tell them how they can reach you?
Yeah, you can reach me on Facebook. You can reach me online at cedricformayor.com. I'm available on Twitter, on Instagram. Just look for Cedric Kaminda. And you can always reach me on my phone, 682-300-6336. So I'm available. So if you have any questions or concerns, something that was not addressed tonight, please reach out. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Y'all listen, remember early voting is April 19th. That's Monday, and it runs through the 27th. We all know Election Day is May 1st. I ask everyone to take somebody to the polls with you, take a group of people to the polls with you. If you have to go up and down your street with bullhorns, tell everybody to get out and vote. Let's make this a historic election here in Fort Worth. We want change. This is our opportunity to get it if we just go to the polls and cast our votes. So, y'all, until next Friday, I've enjoyed my panel. I've enjoyed the show. And as I said, things always happen or turn out just like they should. Good night, y'all. Bye-bye.